want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 163 of the Geocaching Podcast, recorded live on July 20th, 2010. I'm your host, XFunkX, with
Daryl W4.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. You can also join our live chat room to participate with our other listeners, and that can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now button to participate. We have a voicemail line, 206-350-3GPS, and we're on social media, like Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast, and Facebook, geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. This episode is brought to you by Cache Advance. See cache-advance.com for all of your caching needs. Welcome back, Daryl. It's been good, but, you know, It feels like it's been a long time since we've talked again, even though it's just last week. A lot has gone on this last week.
Oh, yeah. It's been quite the busy week. And, you know, we've been traveling and finally got a chance to meet Montu down in Florida and checked out his little train stuff that he's been working with. They had an event there, met a lot of cachers, some I've met before. But big thing was I finally got to meet Montu Ryder face to face. And that was, a lot of fun, interesting experience, and, you know, just one of those, finally, we finally have run into this guy that we've been talking to all this time. What is it, like 4 years now?
Something like that, yeah. We've been doing this podcast for quite a while, and, you know, it's only by, you know, the fact that we live halfway close that we've met before, but, you know, we've never actually physically, at least I've never physically met Montu, but now you've met him, and, you know, hopefully someday I get to meet him too.
Well, and I have the honor now of saying that I've met everyone who's hosted on the show. You know, we had Bad Cop out here, about a year ago now, I guess it was. Did that caching run, and I met him again out in Seattle, and met Montu Ryder down there. And, you know, Head Hard Hat was in the studio last week helping us co-host that, and yeah, it's really cool. I'm glad to have met everyone, and got to get some more pictures up with Montu Ryder. And I think I actually sent you one for the show notes.
Yeah, you did. And I will go ahead and put that in the show notes here. It is always definitely cool to see your hosts and pictures of your hosts. So we'll go ahead and link or put a picture of that picture that you sent me in our show notes at geocachingpodcast.com.
Yeah, that was taken after a long, hot day. And that's a problem down in Florida. You know, I was down here for family reunion that we were doing. And this is probably one of the worst times of year to come down to Disney, which is where we are for the family reunion. Mm-hmm. And it's like 97 degrees in the shade kind of deal. Yeah. And lots of people everywhere. It's incredible how many people come down to, Disney during the summer months when the kids are out of school. And, you know, we're walking around the hotel. We were staying at the Animal Kingdom Jamba House, which is the Animal Kingdom Lodge that most people remember. Jamba House is the resort side, and then they have another one I can't remember the name off the top of my head that was the timeshare kind of side of that. So we're running around the hotel, and I'd say half of the people were not actually speaking English. Mm. And that was kind of a surprise for us, because that's not something we had expected in this kind of more specialized hotel. But Dree was in love with the place, because you look out the window and there's all kinds of animals. She's bouncing around literally off the walls, because, you know, she's in heaven. There's animals everywhere.
Yeah, it sounds like a fun time. I hopefully get to make it down there sometime. I I think I was there when I was younger, but it's been a long time.
Well, it's definitely worth the trip and a lot of fun. You know, there's 5 virtual caches on campus. You know, we didn't get to the one that's actually at Fort Wilderness Lodge, I believe it was. That one, it would have been nice to get to, but we didn't make it over there. The others are, you know, pretty easy, a little bit challenging at times. You know, for one, you know, Magic Kingdom, we had to go find someone that could take our picture. In our case, we just had to wait for everyone else, mm-hmm. you know, because you can't really take a good shot yourself. Yeah, I've been told, though, that they have these photographers that stand around at the Disney parks. And I've been told that if you hand your camera to them, they will take a picture with your camera anyway. So you know, that might not be so bad.
No, not really.
But the big one that we did, though, was the Where I Go cache down in downtown Disney, which you have to drive all the way into Celebration, which is about a 15-minute drive. And that was pretty easy, but pretty cool cache. And it definitely kind of shows what Where I Go can do given the opportunity, but this was a little bit simple a plot. You know, certainly no images, nothing like that, but still a lot of fun to do.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, you know, for me, we've not really done a whole lot this last week. I've just been getting used to the new job, and, you know, it said that it's a decent job, you know, and I'm really liking it. It's good, a lot to get used to, as any job when you first start. But, you know, for me, it's nice to be close to home and have a good job like that. So that's really been going on in my case here. Now, guys, before we get much further into this show, I do want to apologize. I did state on Twitter and Facebook that we were going to be talking with somebody from Navicache tonight. And unfortunately, that didn't work. They were not able to show up. So we may have to reschedule that again. But we don't have anyone about Navicache on tonight, but we are going to be talking about getting good coordinates with your cell phone if you're placing a cache with your smartphone. So stick around for that, and we'll be back after the news.
As of July 16th, the popular BlackBerry paperless caching program, CacheBerry, is known as CacheSense. Along with the name change comes a new version of the software. Version 3.0 includes 10 noted enhancements, including the new nearest cache function, custom filters, custom sort, changes to the Twitter account support, and improvements to the way the database works. Since there's also been a couple of patches to the software, now that brings it to version 3.0.5. We'll have a link in the release notes, or we'll have a link to the release notes in our show notes.
Magellan released 3 new Explorist models last week at the Outdoor Trade Fair in Germany. The new 510, 610, and 710 will be available in the fourth quarter of this year. Each feature a 3-inch touchscreen and 3-axis compass, plus a 3.2-megapixel autofocus camera, microphone, and speaker, allowing capture of video, still photos, and audio notes. These units also include expandable memory, paperless geocaching, and GPX compatibility. Prices range from $349.99 US for the 510 to $549.99 US for the 710. Hit our show notes for links to the press release and product pages, and we'll hope to have more information about these units in the near future.
Geocaching question of the day. The Bad Cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is The Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize their replies and post them on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Is your phone your main GPS for geocaching? 22% of the crafty geocachers that replied said they use their cell phone as their primary GPSR. So tell me, is your phone your primary GPS for geocaching? You want to find out all this and more? Come to my website, cachingnw.com, and follow me, the Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Well, that geocaching question of the day kind of goes along with our topic tonight, because we are going to be talking about getting good coordinates with your cell phone. So it's it's interesting that a lot of the people are using their cell phone as their primary GPS. Now, I've never placed a geocache with my phone, so I know that I've found a few geocaches when I had my BlackBerry. So I do know that you know, sometimes it's not quite right on as far as the coordinates go. You may not get as good of a signal with your phone as you do with a regular GPS. So now, Daryl, I know that you've done a lot of caching with your iPhone, and hopefully here soon with what you're getting, hopefully getting an Android phone. So how is the best way to go about getting good coordinates if we're going to place? Because, you know, a lot of us are now using the phones as our primary GPS, and I know a lot of people want to place caches. I know my mother-in-law just placed her first cache, and she did it with just her phone. And so, and granted, she had the wrong coordinates when she placed it. And so how is a good way to get good coordinates for the phone when you're placing a cache?
Well, I've actually placed a couple of caches with the iPhone and had some pretty good luck. But the thing to remember with cell phones in general that have the built-in GPSs is they don't actually engage the GPS until you try using it. So things like the iPhone and most of the Android phones, when you go in to get a GPS, you have to wait for that to settle and get some better accuracy than when you just first turn it on. It's like going out with, you know, your old handheld GPS, turning it on and saying, okay, that's my coordinates. Well, no, because it's going to be pretty far off. And the cell phones get some pretty good location information just based on the tower information. You know, they're talking with several towers all at once, and just from that, it triangulates its position and knows, well, I'm roughly in this location. So it could look like you have a good lock if you're just looking at the dot on a map. In fact, you're not. You have a location that's 100, 200 feet off. And the other thing is that most of the modern location services is what they actually call it on the phones that actually gets that information, they'll usually have at least two, sometimes three different levels of accuracy that the software can engage. You have a lower accuracy to just give you a rough idea, and then you'll have a better accuracy that gives you some fairly accurate tracking. And in some cases, you'll have something in between which says, you know, give me some information, but use the accelerometer or the towers or whatever to reduce the battery drain, you know, because turning on the GPS really kills the battery. So you have to keep all of that stuff in mind when you're doing the cell phones as your primary GPS to go hide. And really what it comes down to is go place your cache, let the GPS settle for several minutes, make sure that it goes down. And in some cases you have some accuracy indicators. And if you don't, you probably really don't want to be using that too much, but make sure that it gets down really, really low and get a few readings and try to, you know, kind of manually average those readings, since most of those cell phones don't support it.
No.
And we're talking about something that's not very accurate. So getting multiple readings, you know, throw out maybe one or two readings that are way off, but you can get some pretty good readings. You just have to know how to use it. And you have to remember that they don't always get a good GPS signal because it's got such a small antenna. So again, you know, you have to really get multiple readings and check that out.
Now, one of the things I think you could do with, I know the iPhone and the Android phone both support Google Maps, and with Google Maps comes with the satellite view. Now, that's not going to do real good if you're hiding a cache in the forest, because it's going to, if you're looking at the satellite view, it's going to be trees and you're not going to be able to really tell if you're accurate. But if you're trying to hide, you know, something like a light post cache or something that's out in like in an urban area, you might be able to use those satellite views and see, you know, if you're anywhere near some of the landmarks that you can see there. And so you could use those to kind of try and help determine if you're where you need to be as far as placing your cache.
Yeah, the Google Maps can give you a really good idea if you're even close. You know, if you're, you know, 20, 30 feet from a road, but it says you're still on the road, well, you know you've got an issue and you're going to have to take a look at it. But again, this is not a problem that's unique to the cell phones. The cell phones have just changed the way that this all works. You know, because it's not firing up that GPS until you actually go into the GPS app, it really kind of changes it. It's not like you can leave the cell phone on and just, you know, let it track in the car. When you get out of that GPS app, it's going to slow down the tracking if it doesn't stop it completely, so that you're not getting as accurate a read, and then it's not going to pump that up until you get into it. Now, for placing caches on the iPhone, I like to use a Motion X GPS Lite app that's free, and it will give me a lot of that information, and I can get a lot of those GPS functions, and it really does a good job. Now, again, I'm using the iPhone 3GS to place these, which is a little bit more accurate than the original 3G was. So you do have to kind of keep that in mind, that different units are going to be a little bit different. But, you know, it really comes down to, you have to go back for multiple readings and, you know, walk away, take a reading, walk away, take a reading. And it's always good to go in different directions. And you want to travel at least about 30 feet, because that's where the accuracy issues are. And I will say, too, in the new iPhone 4 software, the iOS 4, it has some issues with the GPS on mine where I am just not getting the thing to track. So if you have those kind of problems, you have to, you know, really detect it, because it looks like it's working, but doesn't. So if it's giving you those kind of problems, you know that you're not going to be able to hide any cache with the phone acting like that.
Now, one of the things, too, that you can do, especially if you're going to be placing a cache in the, you have only your iPhone, is especially, like, I know in my mother-in-law's case, I have, you know, a regular Garmin GPS, and so I would be able to go out and check for her. And so that would be something that, another good thing too, is that if you have people that you can trust to go out and see, try and find the cache before it's published, maybe it would maybe be a good idea. Or take your coordinates, bring them back, and use Google Maps again if you're on your computer. That way you can kind of get a better idea. If you're somewhere that has the, you know, where your street view for Google Maps is at, you could probably try and use that and see if that gets a pretty good idea where it's at. And again, the averaging and manually averaging out your coordinates, taking, you know, at least five different coordinates and averaging those together, let your phone set for a little bit, get a good signal. That way it goes ahead and settles down a little bit, and then move around, like you said, at least 30 feet away and come back from a different direction, and then go ahead and take another coordinate and average those together. Would be another good way.
Well, you have a couple of good points that you made there. The first one that I want to talk about is that what I call the quality control check. And sometimes what I'll do is put together the cache page, print out the page, give it to someone, and say, okay, please go and find this for me to make sure that I did everything right. They'll go out, find it, and let you know. And, you know, they're going to sign the log, but I always make sure that they do, you know, like quality control, you know, this is not first to find or something like that, since it's not actually a published cache. But then going back to the Google Maps, when you are placing those caches, you know, creating them on the website, you do get to go in there and put in all of your coordinates and everything, click on that Google Maps link, and that's a great way to make sure that you've actually gone out and gotten the right coordinates, put them into the web page right, because all it takes is one number to be a little bit off, and you can be in big trouble.
Well, in my mother-in-law's case, I think that might have been what happened. She may have put it in down wrong, and so the first person that did find it did say, you know, I think your coordinates are a little bit off. I found it, and here's the coordinates. And so she was able to then go ahead and recorrect it.
Yeah, and we've not had any complaints with any of the caches that we've QC'd, but we get really nervous about it with some of these caches, especially when you're placing the nanos. We want to make sure it's really obvious. You know, nano in a urban setting can be, you know, really a pain for the cacher to find if it's not, you know, obvious.
Nano, and a nano in any setting can be hard to find if it's not obvious.
Yeah. But yeah, and you know, if you've got an urban setting like that, it can be really, really unnerving for anyone around because there's someone hanging around and doing weird things.
Yeah, true. Definitely. So now basically what you're saying is you just double check and triple check. And is that your basic takeaway here? Kind of just make sure that you know where it's at, let it settle a little bit, make sure you're actually in there and it's using the GPS, correct?
Yeah. And the big thing with the cell phones, you know, these are all good rules for the most part that work with any device, whether it's a handheld GPS or a cell phone. But when you're working with a cell phone, it's even more important that you make sure that you're running that GPS for a while, let it settle. It, you know, usually even 5 minutes isn't enough time with a small GPS like that. You really need to give it some time, make sure it settles, and then you can try to get those ratings.
All right. Now, if there's any, we've seen a lot of really, really good ideas here in the chat room, and we will go ahead and link to this chat text in our show notes at geocachingpodcast.com. Lots of good things. People are saying, you know, hey, don't use Google Maps. People are saying, hey, yes, use Google Maps, especially for quality control, things like that. So again, that's our website's geocachingpodcast.com. And we'll have links to all of the things that we've talked about today, and especially this chat text, so you can go ahead and kind of see what's going on in this live chat as we're recording.
Yeah, the satellite view of the Google apps is not going to be accurate. It is much better than Bing is, in my experience. You know, when we're caching up here in Michigan through the geocaching.com app, Bing Maps, you know, it's at least 50 to 100 feet off usually. You know, you take a nice, easy-to-read landmark like a tree or a bench, and it's showing, you know, 50 feet away, but it's right under there, so... you know, Bing Maps are not very good for doing this, but the Google Maps have been, you know, within about 5-10 feet in our area. But again, you have to check for your area because these are things that someone has aligned and it could be really far off in your area.
True, definitely. So one of the things to remember is, guys, just get good coordinates, especially no matter what, but especially if you're using a cell phone. It's important to get good coordinates, make sure your cell phone has settled a little bit, so that way you get a chance to actually use the GPS and not just the phone and triangulation, because you'll have a lot. It's easy to hunt out a cache that's placed if you don't know the exact coordinates, but when you place a cache and then everyone's going to come to your wrong coordinates, it isn't real good, and a lot of times you'll get cachers that will come back to you and say, hey, I really think your phone or your coordinates are off, so definitely double-checking, triple-checking, things like that. You know, you get a good quality cache, people are going to love it, and part of being good quality is having good coordinates too. We want to thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. We want to thank Lisa from Cache Advance for making this episode possible with her donation. Join us each Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. You can call our voicemail, and that phone number is 206-3503-GPS. Anytime to leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching.